back to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. If you're just joining us, we're listening to Only 15 Years to End Civilization's Energy Failures with Tom Ashbrook and his guests.
Leon, is there a hostage-taking here in effect dynamic? That are those countries saying, you pay for our cleanup or we're all going down?
I think Rob is going to be more on top of that than I am. But I would say that, in fact, that is exactly what's going on. And I think one thing that's interesting to point out is that if current trends continue, this notion of historical responsibility, this is something Rob has pointed out in the past, is going to be changing. So a lot of the discussions now have to do with who actually is responsible for where we are. And we can look to the richest countries because historically they've produced most of the emissions. But with the rapid growth in places like China, that's going to change. And there's going to be countries 10 years, 20 years from now who historically, who were not responsible for historical emissions in the same way that we are today, who are going to be equal to us. And so I think a lot of that dynamic is actually changing and will be changing because those countries really are moving out of those income groups. So there is a distinction between some of these countries that are moving towards more advanced economies and those that are really quite poor.
Rob, we see the photographs out of China, and we hear India maybe even worse in some ways. It just looked terrible. We hear that China, at least, is beginning to move on more effective policies. Might they not see it as simply in their own interest to be hyper-aggressive on cleaning up because it looks chokingly uncomfortable already there?
Well, that's exactly what's happening, Tom. So there's a tremendous amount of action happening in China that affects CO2 emissions, that lowers it below what they otherwise would be, but it's not because of climate change or CO2. It's because there's a high degree of correlation between those CO2 emissions and localized air pollutants, particulates and ozone or smog. And that's where there's very serious concern in China, partly for reasons of political stability.
Bob in Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. Very important discussion today. Gentlemen, please allow me to just put my point of view in here about the nuclear industry creates a whole new kind of a cleanup that can't be limited to local and regional solutions. It becomes international problem. Nuclear industry, number one, not good idea. Can't go there. India and other countries that are, China in particular, need to reforest, need to make economy out of reforesting. And there is cultural change coming in agriculture if we can just keep Monsanto's hands off of it.
Bob, let us pick up the nuclear piece. Rob Stavins, what about it? Can we meet these aggressive goals without nuclear power?
I think given the magnitude of the challenge, it's important not to rule anything out. So I would include in that, you know, renewables, carbon capture and storage to be able to continue increasing using coal, natural gas as a transition fuel, and nuclear power. It should be an all-of-the-above approach. It's not going to work by taking things off the table before you even start talking.
James in Columbia, South Carolina. James, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
There's two big problems in the climate change discussion. One is, on the opposing side, they always say there's always a hot and a cold shift on the Earth. And that's true. But the problem is right now is the speed at which we're going will not allow for environmental adaptation.
Yes.
And maybe even human adaptation.
Yeah.
And the second thing is on the side for, climate change is we have a lot of hypocrites. They're not willing to take the steps that are required to affect climate change. In other words, they don't invest. Some of them have a lot of money, and they don't invest it into the studies or to the equipment. Look at the cars they drive. Look at the houses they live in and the way they live.
You mean, James, even if they see it coming, they're hypocritical in responding. They don't respond.
Correct. Mm-hmm. I mean, I live in a house. My electric bill is one-third the cost of some of the people, most of the people live around me, because I pay attention to what I'm doing. I do farming, and I do it I try to do it environmentally safe. Some people around here call me the truck driver, woodworking, and environmentalist, because I know that with care you can do things. I try to get good gas mileage. I drive correctly. I do wood work. I try to get sustainable forest supplied wood, but I care about the environment. I'm not a tree hugger, but I do care.
Yeah.
And the problem is there's people that they care, but they're just not willing to commit. And if they have the money or the time, they just don't commit. And it's hypocritical, and that sways the other side to say, look, you're not doing it.
Yeah, James, we've got it. I mean, it's hard to deny that point. Sometimes it's hard for people to get their heads around it and then maybe to take the steps to action required by the theme of a report like this one, even when they do. And here's Alan writes to us. He says, what I wonder is what climate event will have to occur to create a tidal wave of political and individual effort to change. He's writing online to us here. Will it be a massive hurricane that wipes out Miami? Or will we be like frogs in the cook pot and simply get used to worse and worse small events until it's too late? What's your sense, Rob Stavins, of where we are in that catalytic either gradual understanding, or will it take some terrible whack, you know, across the side of the head to get our attention?
I think that's a great question. And what I think about is the fact that the history of environmental regulation in the United States has come about as a result of observed or presumed disasters. So let's think about the Cuyahoga River catching on fire in Cleveland, Ohio, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The next morning in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, there were no articles that said, well, rivers periodically catch on fire for natural reasons.
Yeah.
It was obvious, and that led to the Clean Water Act within 18 months. However, in the case of climate change, as the caller was implicitly pointing out, none of us observe the climate. None of us. We observe the weather.
Yeah.
And the weather varies tremendously within any given climate. There's a signal-to-noise ratio problem in terms of human beings, including myself, observing what is happening. So that's a tremendous challenge. And therefore, relying on the political process, which has so successfully in the United States brought us environmental statutes since the first Earth Day, is probably not going to work going forward. What's needed really is enlightened political leadership at the very highest levels. That's what's going to be required. And obviously breaking of the deadlock of political polarization that's come to exist, particularly in the House of Representatives.
I mean, it's hard to see that emerging just at the high levels without some large public movement to give those leaders a sense that the population will be behind them. Barack Obama talked a pretty strong game, but he didn't make it the emphasis of his first term in office once he was elected, Rob.
Well, that was for a variety of reasons.
Well, there's always reasons, right? I mean, it's inconvenient.
It is costly, but there are specific reasons. Remember, that legislation was tried in the midst of the greatest recession the United States has faced since the Great Depression,
mm-hmm.
and things had already been polarized partly by going first with health care. What I'm saying is
mm-hmm.
that the prognosis going forward is that this bottom-up demand, which normally we certainly always want to have and rely on in a representative democracy, is, in my view, unlikely to work in the case of climate change policy as it has for other environmental problems. It's going to have to be the leaders taking the lead.
Boy, that's I'm not sure how that works, given the cost, and you can get kicked out of office if you don't have the population behind you. Leon, here's a listener who writes online, I've never disagreed with the apparent consensus that the Earth is warming and humans are to blame. But James writes, he says, I've just come to question whether the cost of addressing this is worth it. What about the cost of addressing it versus the cost of not addressing it, Leon?
Well, that's a good question. So the report that we just came out with articulates what the costs are, what the costs might be to address it. And even there, there's a wide range of uncertainty about what the cost would be. If you think out 100 years, it's very hard to know exactly how much it would cost to do this. There's a wide range of uncertainties. But that's the cost of reducing emissions. What we don't have right now from Working Group 2, which is one of the other two working groups of the IPCC, is a clear assessment of what would be the reduced damages from climate change. There are some assessments in that report, highly uncertain, of what the damages might be if we actually did reduce emissions. But there's not a really good sense in any meaningful way of what the damages would be if we didn't do anything. And so that turns out to be a real serious problem. You look at the cost. People say, oh, look, we've seen costs. As one of your earlier callers said, you know, I can't take any more hits on my pocketbook and so forth, and that's quite fair. But there would be hits potentially on people's pocketbooks if we don't do anything. But given that that's so uncertain and it's in the future, it's really hard to put that into a calculus where people feel comfortable. If they know it's going to cost something, they know exactly what the two choices are, then it's very easy to make that choice.
Is that still so vague in IPCC circles? I mean, a week or two ago, we had the first, an earlier one of these reports, and now this one. I mean, we've been reading headlines saying that the impact is already hitting. They're talking about ice sheets collapsing, sea level rise, you know, food shortage, extinctions. Those hardly sound cost-free at all, Leon. They sound almost apocalyptic.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's two ways that we think about the damages from climate change and how we might reduce them. One is the sort of classic economic way. Can we put an economic value on those? And that's something that we have a hard time doing. Yet at the same time, when we talk about...
What kind of morons are we if we can't put an economic value on ice sheet collapse? I mean, how smart do you have to be to understand that that would be very costly?
I think we can understand that it would be very costly. I think that's true. I think what's hard is figuring out exactly how costly. And there's a wide range of other issues that come up. There's ecosystem loss, there's biodiversity losses, there's human health, which raises a whole host of issues associated with how you value people's lives and so forth. There's a range of issues that make it very hard to quantify. And in addition to that, we don't have a great feel for exactly what it will be like if we have temperature change of 6 or 7 degrees centigrade. So I agree that we have a sense that it's a large magnitude, but until there's a real clear sense of what those numbers are, what you find is that on the reducing emission side, we come with economic costs, but then on the benefit side, what would we gain from reducing climate change, what would we gain from not having a changed climate, we don't have those numbers, and it makes it very hard to do a cost calculus.
We better pull our heads out of our spreadsheet a little bit there. Carol in London, Kentucky. Carol, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. I just wanted to say it's time to stop being polite about this. Stop the subsidies to the oil and gas companies today and put it to the development of clean, green solar and what other alternatives there are, certainly not nuclear, and we have to do it now.
Stop being polite. Let's go. $4 billion a year in tax incentives for fossil fuel production in this country. Rob Stavins, could we shift that over, put it into green energy production, and turbocharge our way forward here?
Well, one of the things that the IPCC report just released in Berlin talks about and demonstrates is the importance of reducing greenhouse gas subsidies, principally subsidies, obviously, for fossil fuels globally. There was an agreement by the G20 countries in Pittsburgh a few years ago. Heads of state were present, including President Obama, and they agreed to begin to do this globally. The resistance, of course, it hasn't been implemented. The resistance really comes from some major developing countries for whom keeping energy prices low to their populations they perceive to be very important. So this was actually quite controversial in Berlin in our discussions this past week.
This challenge not going away, but this report putting it front and center, just how much speed and determination it will take if we want to head off these major changes. Rob Stavins was there in Berlin, joined us today from Newton, Massachusetts. Rob, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
And Leon Clark, lead author on the section on switching from fossil fuels to clean energy. Leon, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure as well.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
So you want to attempt to become tax exempt, you will soon learn the government's game. You will have to address a huge paperwork mess if Tea Party's a part of your name. When IRS guys are smiling and you're on the liberals list, when they say you missed a filing, they act like proctologists. No deducting your tinfoil headwear, 'cause you think they are out to get you. 'Cause the IRS has groups they repress. It's not paranoid when it's true. When IRS guys are prying and they say they know your type, though with laws you are complying, they treat you like Wesley Snipes. Their audits caused you an ulster, and your paperwork's Dublin, they say. Then just give the address of the IRS to your friends at the NRA.
I am walking down this track. I've got tears in my eyes. I'm trying to read a letter from my home. And if this train runs me right, I'll be home Saturday night. 'Cause I'm 900 miles from my home. Lord, I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. This train I ride on is 100 coaches long. Well, you can hear her whistle blow 1,000,000 miles. And if this train runs me right, I'll see my woman on Saturday night. 'Cause I'm 900 miles from my home. Lord, I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. I will pawn you my wagon, and I will pawn you my team. I'll pawn you my watch and my chain. And if this train runs me right, I'll be home Saturday night. 'Cause I'm 900 miles from my home. Lord, I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow. That long, lonesome whistling down.
Wish I was in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sansomelia at the beginning of the day. But here I am in New York City, hiding out in Central Park, getting kidnapped by the police. Today is sometime before dark, but I wish I was in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sansomelia at the beginning of the day. Take it away. Judge looked down upon me frowning. He said, kid, get on your way. Just don't start out your mornings with espresso in the J. I said, I wish I was in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe, smoking good old Sansomelia at the beginning of the day. Hitched a ride out to Portland, caught one up to BC, took a bus over to Hastings Street to have a bowl with my coffee. Now I'm Cannabis Cafe. Smoking good old Sensimilia at the beginning of the day. Now I'm up in Vancouver at the Cannabis Cafe. Smoking good old Sensimilia at the beginning of the day.
Come on across to me. We'll hold hands and then we'll watch the sun rise from the bottom of the sea. But first, are you experienced? Have you ever been experienced? Well, I have. That your little world won't let you go. But who in your busy little world are trying to prove that you're made out of gold? It can't be sold. So, are you experienced? Have you ever been experienced? Well, I have.
That's all, folks.